Good morning, everybody. It's Mark Steiner. We are here live today, so y'all can join us at 410-319-8888. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. You can also send an email to talk@steinershow.org. And why? Because we begin our program today looking at the Baltimore City School deficit, the crisis in our city schools. I think it's greater almost in many ways than I've seen in a long time since I've been covering this over the last 24 years. So we begin our program with that. And then the last part of our program, because of what happened to Morgan today, will be truncated, but we will be looking at meditation, yoga, tai chi, its role in calming and strengthening our communities for young people. So with Changa Yango and Changa Bell and Michelle, so we're calling it the Changa Squared Michelle Show. But that comes up next. We are now going to talk here with Bibi Verdery, who is Director of the Education Reform Project at the ACLU of Maryland, Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education at Morgan State University, who's been deeply involved in our public school system, A-Rod Womack, author of Redwood, a new book coming out called Capital Office on Public
Central
Schools.
Office.
Central Office. This is Capital here, I'm sorry. Central Office on Capital Schools, and former Baltimore City's Director for Food and Nutrition. So please join us at 410-319-8888. Our school system is facing a $129 million deficit. We're talking about laying off 1,000 people. We're talking about more than that. We're also talking about ending arts and music. Some people have talked about, some teachers have said they've been heard notices that junior varsities will be dumped, that schools are facing huge deficits. They have to, since principals now have to manage their own budgets, which could be a crisis in itself. So we're going to talk about why we're here, what that means, and what to do about it. 410-319-8888. Dying to hear from all of you out there, especially parents of our students, what you're thinking about, what's going on. Teachers on break, 410-319-8888. You can also email us, talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. We want your ideas and thoughts. So, Bibi, let me turn to you first, because you and I have been talking about this in the air for a couple decades.
Yeah.
and ACLU was instrumental in the lawsuit that ended up in the Thornton formula for our schools. So let me track back to where we are and why we are in the place we're in. I mean, there are some people saying, you know, in the state legislatures that you have to look to the way school leaders have managed the budget. Is that the problem? Many people don't realize that school construction costs, there's $1 billion for our city schools. Part of that money comes out of our school system budget. From what I understand, we can talk a bit about that and what that means. And that's, you know, that people don't, I think, realize. What's changed in Thornton, and what's Kerwin's Commission's relationship to Thornton in terms of our schools? It's a really confusing mess that has fallen down on the backs of our children and teachers. Bibi.
Thank you, Mark. Yes, we'll talk today about the impact that these cuts, if they come down, will have on our schools and our children and our teachers. What we want to do is avoid those cuts. And so we are working with the Baltimore Education Coalition to call on citizens to reach out to the mayor, to reach out to the state government to see how much of this $130 million gap can be bridged this year, because the state and city both have a responsibility to our kids. Very quickly, why, in our opinion, we are in this situation is that the city school system, because it's in a low-wealth district, the city of Baltimore, is highly dependent on state money for its school system. The state, 9 years ago, cut the formula that we all worked to pass, the Bridge to Excellence Act, the Thornton formula, that was intended to fully fund schools across the state. We had a recession. So when that recession hit, the leaders in the legislature and the governor at the time cut the formula that was supposed to increase aid over time so that schools could keep up with inflation, keep up with rising costs. And that means that what recent state charts and budget figures show, that the school system is actually getting $290 million less per year than the original formula called for. So those were decisions made at the state level. It's sort of understandable. There was a recession. But decisions have consequences. And when you take away $290 million, it's sort of amazing when you don't have more than a $130 million deficit. There are different drivers that we can talk about. But the fundamental driver is the structural deficit is caused by cuts in state aid.
So that seems to be a contradiction to what the governor's office says all the time about putting more money into schools than ever before. And what he said to us directly here on this program during our Annapolis summit, that I put more money into public schools than any other governor before me.
The governor is funding the formula that is before him, and that formula was cut. So what he is funding is a formula that was cut and reduced, so he is funding that. The other point is the governor, any governor, is forced to increase the education budget by the formula as students increase across the state. So more, he's having to raise his budget because there are more children, not in Baltimore City, but as children join the system, they come with a certain price tag in the state formula. So every governor can say that they are increasing state aid.
And I've said that to him, and he got really upset when I did say that to him, but I just was making sure that I had my stuff straight. I mean, but it seems to me that this is what we're facing here. I mean, something really very serious. We're talking about $1,093 cuts from our traditional schools and $494 cuts from our charter schools. And that's because the charters are not given transportation and food. And so food, they're not given transportation. No
professional development from central office.
So they have to use that money for themselves. Right. So, but our traditional schools are taking a huge hit here. A huge hit.
They are.
And so I, you know, what needs to be the response? I mean, somebody, when Catherine Pugh ran for mayor, she spoke about putting at least up to $200 million into our school system over a period of years and building that up. And some people are saying, well, maybe what you need to do now is put $50 million in right away, wherever you get the money from. The schools need the money. Where would the money come from? How would she do that?
Right. Mark.
A-Rod.
Thank you. So, you know, for some time, as you're aware, I was a business liaison for the Baltimore City School Systems, which means that I had the opportunity to work directly with principals to help them manage their budgets. That's what I was tasked to do. This is a complicated problem, in my opinion, that just requires a not so simple solution. And the simple solution would be from the outside to just throw money at the problem. It sounds like it's just that easy, but I don't think that it is. I mean, we've seen, as it's already been stated, we've seen the system go flatline from our funding from as far as the state. The state provides the school system about 70% of its overall funding. The city provides, give or take, 20%, and the federal government provides about 10%. So it's flatline. Part of the problem is the same problem that major school systems are seeing around the country. It's not just us. It's not like that makes it any easier for us to grapple with, but it's not just us. Major school systems are seeing around the country. So it's part of the issues that we're dealing with, some of the ebb and flow of just pure capitalism. We're in a capitalistic system. We have a situation where costs constantly go up, so salaries may be increasing. Contracts are renegotiated. Inflation is happening around us, but the budget that actually goes to support school systems around the country, for the most part, don't rise to meet the level of increases that normally happen in a given situation. So for me, that's part of the core issue. We still have not figured out a way as a society and even as a city to create long-term sustainable funding for our school systems. We've got to create long-term sustainable funding.
So I'm going to come back in a minute to SBB in terms of the history and why we're there in terms of what A-Rod was saying, but let me let you leap into this as well. To kind of throw your thoughts in here, Ronnie.
Well, I think everybody has said what I was thinking. The bottom line is, what is the solution? I mean, the state can say, well, we're giving you record money. The city can say, we don't have money. But I have a daughter who's at Western who told me the other day that if this goes through, she will not be able to take advanced math courses. There are real implications for what this is going to mean for.
Why did she say that? Are they saying
because they would have to cut teachers that teach certain courses because the more advanced courses have less students. So when you start increasing class sizes, that automatically means that she's in the AP track. So they may not offer AP calculus because you don't have a big demand even at a school like Western.
I'm not surprised your daughter's in AP, but anyway, go ahead.
But, you know, she was telling me, Mom, this is going to be crazy. They can only do instead of 4 years of math, they would only have three because you would only have enough teachers to warrant three. particularly for the high achieving students. So we can talk about all day the whys, the wherefore. You're right, it is a money issue. We've fallen short for all kinds of reasons. But at the end of the day, what are the implications for Baltimore City students being competitive when they go out into colleges and universities with these kinds of cuts? And particularly when you start talking about higher level classes with smaller enrollments. I mean, the reality is when you start ciphering off money and you start increasing class sizes, those more advanced courses with smaller groups of students are going to be cut because you don't have the teachers to teach them. So then what happens to those students? So to me, we can sit here all day and talk about the formula. And then also I was reading an article, it's my last point, when they were bringing in the slots and the gambling, the whole thing was about schools. We're doing this for schools. And I was reading an article the other day, and it was like, yeah, well, some of that money's going for school, but not in the proportion that it was intended, particularly with gaming being increased over the years, but not necessarily school funding. So there's a whole lot of balls in the air, but I'm just concerned about kids in schools and what that's going to mean for how competitive they're going to be when they move out in the world. That's my concern. Like, what does that all mean for the kid at Poly, Western, Edmondson, who has less teachers, and now you expect them to be ready for college and have the resources they need? What are we going to do about that?
410-319-8888 is the number here. Folks, do join. I want to hear your ideas and thoughts about what you think has to happen with our Baltimore City schools, where we make this money up, why it's happening, what the solutions are. And I'm also curious to hear from all of you, either calling in at 410-319-8888 or write to us here by email at talk@sanishu.org. Tweet us, those 140 characters or less, with your thoughts and ideas about. I'm also curious why people are not just outraged and in the street. Camping out in front of the mayor's house, camping out in front of the city hall, Annapolis, wherever you have to be. We're talking about our students in the kids in the city. And so, Bibi, I mean, how do you respond to the idea A-Rob was positing that look, this nature. He wasn't just dismissing it, but he was just saying that that's the way this capitalist system works. We only have so much money, and so where does that come from? What do we expect them to do? Them being the state and city government.
The Maryland Constitution says that the primary directive they are supposed to accomplish is to educate the kids. It's the one thing the state constitution says, other than pay its debt, that they are supposed to accomplish as a government. So it's a matter of priorities. The state is in a deficit. The mayor says that she's in a deficit. But hard choices have to be made. And if we prioritize the thing that we're supposed to be prioritizing, there are creative solutions that people can come up with. The state government and the city government are prioritizing things, and I'm sure callers will have opinions about those different things that have been prioritized. You know, tax cuts have been given to, when the millionaire's tax was wiped out years ago, that deprived the state of a huge source of revenue. So you have to look at what your priorities are and make the decisions you need to make, because these cuts are going to be devastating. Our phone is ringing off the hook. People are, organizing house parties and trips to Annapolis and petition drives. We're having a big rally in Annapolis with the Baltimore Education Coalition.
That's
Thursday, 6:30. We're running buses, which are full, but we're trying to fit everybody in that we can, and people can reach information about the rally at BEC for Our Kids Facebook page.
So, one of the things that this says to me is that you talked about what's facing your daughter at Western. And one of the things that I think about is, so it's affecting the kids who are in the most advanced.
It could. That's what I'm saying.
It could. But it also is affecting the kids at the
exactly.
Every level.
Who are struggling because we still have huge problems with children not reading or doing math at grade level in the city.
And when you start increasing class sizes, my point is, the principals are at a crossroads because you have to cut the budget and you're cutting teachers. Where you cut is off the ends. It's a normal curve distribution. You the high end, the low, So the middle might still get something. It may be some watered down version because they're going to have larger class sizes with less teachers. I think that's going to get people in the streets when they realize, what does it mean for John Q. Public's child? we talking all this abstract, oh, money's left. But for most people, it's like, okay, my kid's still going to school, et cetera. But as Sandalisa said, July 2nd, the schools are going to look very different if we don't deal with this. And it means specific things that we have to start looking at. It's not just this generic cut. Mm-hmm. It is going to mean certain things will not be offered. Things will be cut, classes will be larger, teachers will be unemployed. These are the things that we need to start talking about, not just this generic, oh, we're a deficit.
So let me ask this question, and I'm curious, because I can hear people asking this question as I listen to this, especially in other parts of the state, not Baltimore City and just other jurisdictions. Well, why isn't Baltimore County having this problem? Why isn't Montgomery County having this problem? Why aren't other jurisdictions not having these issues of a deficit facing their students? So how would you describe? I'll come right to you.
Let me
just go to BB and then A-Rod. And how would you describe to people why it's happening here but nowhere else? Or a few other places, I should say.
For the last couple of years, the main drivers of the deficit have been that enrollment has dropped, so you get money per pupil. We lost nearly 2,000 kids last year. We lost nearly 1,000 kids this year. So, with fewer kids, there's less money, but that doesn't necessarily mean your infrastructure shrinks. You know, you don't say, well, we lost 950 kids. Well, how many teachers does it take to teach those? So that's part of the cut. The other thing is, and this has been written about a lot, is the growing wealth of the city. The wealth of the city is growing, which is good for the city. But it means less state aid because the formula gives more state aid to the poorest counties in Maryland. And so Baltimore County is not one of the poorest counties in Maryland. So when state aid gets cut to the poorest counties, it hits them harder because there's a greater proportion of their budget.
Yeah. So, I would agree with BB. From a standpoint of median incomes show an influx, increase, over the past, let's say, 10 years. However, the problem is that our school formulas, not only from state to city, but from not only from the state to the city, but also from the city to the schools, are almost always tethered to population. Mm-hmm. And so what's happened when I was at the school system in 2012, we had 84,000 kids going to Baltimore City schools. As of the article in the Sun last week, there were 81,000.
Yeah.
So we've seen a consistent decline of population in the city, and our funding is tied to it. Our state funding is tied to population.
So that leads to the question of, and folks, I really don't want to hear from you all, 410-319-8888. These are your children. These are our children. This is the future of this city and state and country. Young people were talking about it. I want to get to the point of why kids in our city may need more. But I hear what you're saying, but then that leads me to question, there's something wrong with the formula.
There could very well be.
I mean, that seems to me, if the formula's not answering the question about how to fund our schools, then it's not taking things into account.
Exactly.
Need
so
be taken
I just
account.
Have to talk about a formula. I'm a mathematics educator, so I'm very aware of how formulas are built on certain assumptions. So we have to question the assumptions that the formula is built on. The formula is going to do what the formula is going to do. I mean, once you build a formula on certain assumptions, it operates in those assumptions. The question is, are we going to challenge the assumptions that the formula was built on to shift the formula? Because what people can say is, well, the formula says I give you this, but it's based on certain assumptions. It's not based on historic inequities. It's not based on failing infrastructure that needs more money. You see what I'm saying? So, yeah, a formula can give you what you get. I mean, but mathematicians will tell you, well, let's deal with the assumptions. And I don't think people want to deal with those assumptions, dealing with those, particularly the historic inequities, the infrastructure failures, that renegotiated contract with teachers has an impact. There's a whole lot that is happening, which I'm going to leave that alone for now. But there's a whole lot that is built into the formula for the state, plus why this deficit is. Mathematically, it makes sense. But the question is, now what?
So the formula, you've been battling with formulas for years in the state legislature. Is there something, what's wrong with the formula?
What are the assumptions that are embedded in the formula that we need to now question?
Well, the formula as passed was a good thing. It took into account maybe not all the structural inequities over time, but it took into account the fact that Baltimore City and the poorer counties serve more children that are from low-income households and need more support, that kids with disabilities, kids who are English language learners. They, mm-hmm. under the formula, all get more money. But when they did the cutback in 2008, we've gotten, basically, the original formula is not being funded. The original formula was good. What they did is cut it back. And there is, as Mark mentioned, a new commission that's been set up, chaired by Britt Kerwin, so I'll refer to it as the Kerwin Commission, that's going to be meeting through the end of this year. And next year in the legislature...
This calendar year.
Next year, there's going to be a big challenge in the legislature where we need to make sure that the Kerwin Commission comes out with an updated formula that addresses some of those issues you just mentioned and updates it to make sure that our kids are going to get what they need, and then it's something that we're going to have to work together to pass in the legislative session of 2018. So this is a very critical year, and that's why Dr. Santelises is talking about this as bridge formula, bridge funding. We want the state to go outside of the formula this year and fill in some of that gap, to fix the gap that has been created by the state. So this $130 million, the formula is the sort of revised defective formula is funded. We need them to go outside that formula and fill in the gap until we can get the new formula passed.
So I do want to go to the phones here very quickly, Ron, so I can get to the phones. Go ahead. What were we going to say?
Oh, no. Real quick, just I was going to piggyback off something Ronnie said, and it is back to the renegotiated contract from 2010 and how that impacts it. I think we'll wait till you take the calls if you want.
Renegotiated contract with?
Well, when Dr. Lonzo renegotiated mm-hmm. contract with the BTU, that is having an impact on us right now. And I'm not saying he did it with the best intentions. The idea was to get teachers paid more, especially new teachers, with higher salaries so we attract better talent. Unfortunately, there was no long-term plan to sustain that. Yet a five-year plan for the actual increase of salary.
But part of the contradiction there was that the formula was not met.
No, but that's a different thing.
No, it's not. It's not. No, they're totally connected. If we have a deficit from the formula of almost $290 million,
yes,
that has caused this $130 million deficit, they're directly connected. Because the money's not coming in that was expected to come in to be able to fund what he negotiated.
Actually, yes, you're right. I'm just saying that's added to it. That's what I'm saying to you. It added to that deficit already. So we were already playing with the deficit.
No, but I guess where we disagree is it's where you put the blame. The blame is not on the teacher contract.
Well, I don't think it's
I don't think it's a blame. I'm putting the blame at all.
It's like the formula. There are contributing factors to any deficit, just like in your household.
That's all I'm saying.
It's contributing factors.
Right.
It could be a main thing that you got to cut in your salary, but then if you overhear Walmart every 5 seconds, so it's all, to me, when you look at the big picture, all of these things converge to give us what we have.
Right.
It's no blame, because to me, blame is useless.
Right.
What's useful is understanding what's happening and then thinking about now what is the solution, how do we either reformulate the formula, assume the assumptions, whatever it is, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, John Q. Public's kid is going to be in an underfunded school, which is going to impact resources and impact what's available to the kid, period.
So let me open the phones here, folks. What are you thinking at 410-319-8888? And Walter, you're on the air. Welcome.
Brother and sisters, I need y'all to realize one thing. The blame today, at this day, February 21st, 2017, lays at the feet of the governor, who refused last year to spend the money earmarked by the State House for Baltimore City Schools, for Montgomery County Schools, and for Prince George's County Schools. Now, you're wrong, Mark. There are problems in Montgomery County. They have students in trailers up there, okay? I've seen these trailers. I'm not telling you that I travel the state. But the problem we have is that you got an Oreo Stadium built on tax money. You got Raven Stadium built on tax money. You have the Under Armour welfare project going up with tax money. These monies that hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, then you get to the city council. First you go to the governor and you ask him, why did you not spend the money that was granted by the state to Baltimore City? Then you ask the city council, how much many billions of dollars do we have to put into the harbor where the city itself, in my street in particular, needs repairs, need the infrastructure investments? I beg you to ask yourself that question, then look at North Avenue and say, if you could get 10% to change not just the life of those people, but the whole city, if that money for the Under Armour Village or the project for the electric company, if you put that on North Avenue, how beautiful that would be. But the issue is, my last point, the damn charter school money. That money should, and see, we had the same situation. I'm from Washington originally, D.C., and what they did, they slowly but surely, sister, you're absolutely right. They started cutting programs. They cut out art. They cut out music. They cut out shop. And then all of a sudden, we had this ridiculous group called Parents United, and they, quote, want every student to be ready for college, which was a joke. And now we have charter schools demanding the per-pupil expenditure in D.C., even though they don't provide not half the services, but they want per-pupil expenditures for students in charter schools, which is ridiculous because it's all profit for them.
So you said a lot, Walter. A whole lot. Let me just tackle one piece. We talked about charter schools a little earlier. I mean, this has always been a thorny issue. And I think the charter school thing is a complex thing. Because as we talked about earlier, part of that money for charter schools is because they don't get all the resources that city schools do, so they want to get extra money, which is why some of them sued the city, which I had real issues with, but they sued the city. And so I don't want to lay at all at the feet of the charter schools here. But part of the issue with charter schools, it was a totally different conversation, mm-hmm. is that it also is an inequities inside the charter school system. Mm-hmm. The reality is, if you have a charter school that was created by mostly wealthy white people,
mm-hmm. right.
it has the money, they have the money to function. If you have a charter school started by black educators, they're struggling for money to put in their schools. There's a real dichotomy here, but that's another conversation, I think. But the Aussie thing, the casino gambling thing, is interesting because that money was never. They did the money used for education from casinos, paid for what the schools are getting now. It didn't add extra money to the
exactly.
schools, and it didn't legally have to. That's what we.
You know what? That's true.
And that's how they sold it to us on the advertising. But it had nothing to do. But that wasn't the reality.
there were other changes too in terms of how it was some bait and switch. Absolutely, in terms of how that was formulated. One part of that was initially that formula was supposed to be that 60% of the casino was supposed the revenue from the casino rather was supposed to be table games, right? And I'm sorry, slots, and 40% table games, right? Where most of the funding that was coming from the casino dollars was coming from slots, not table games. That's the way the Caesars originally pitched it to the state, and that's the way the state bought it, right? And that's the way they sold it to us. However, after that licensing went through, all you got to do is check the record. It's public record. That automatically switched, like within months, because I remember calling one of my delegates and saying, what just happened? You know, what just happened here? So what happened was they switched the formula from 60% table slots to 60% table games. So now there's more the revenue comes from table games,
right.
Which means less goes into the educational trust fund.
That's really interesting. That's a really important understanding that I didn't have either until you threw it out there. That's really interesting. I have to read that more closely. So the question is, how do you make this gap up between now and January when another fight begins in the state legislature, which is what you were talking about, BB, which is where the fight is going to be to close the gap, is what Sonia Santelices and others are doing. So where does that money come from? The mayor has talked about foundations and private businesses, but I don't think they're going to make
that's
up a...
Not a
they're not going to make up that gap. It's got
no.
to come from
not
they might be able to
million dollars.
They might be able to contribute
right
something.
Five, ten
yeah. million dollars maybe.
We can say we can have a bake sale. We're not going
right.
to do this. Like,
so,
let's not do this. But it goes back to your point about priorities, right? You can tell where someone's value is by looking at how they spend their money. That's personal, it's organizational, et cetera. The question I have is it a priority for those kids in Baltimore City to get an equitable education? If that's the priority, it doesn't matter how we do it. It becomes a commitment, a joint commitment on the state, the city, the school board, whoever, to make sure that our kids get that. I believe it's not a priority. It's something to say, oh yeah, we care. But when you spend money, that tells you what you care about. So can we put all of this aside and say, it's a shortfall, let's deal with that? And I don't think they're going to do that because it's too political. I think the governor has some some other agendas. I mean, I think he's doing his best with this, you know, convoluted formula. But the question I always ask is, what's the priority? Are we really committed to dealing with this gap and not having it be on the backs of the kids? That's my question. If we are, then we would not allow the school system to cut how it has to, because we know what that's going to mean, because John Q. Public's kid is not going to get what they need. And are we okay with that?
So the question is, what are the ideas that are on the table? Let's start with the mayor, for the mayor to consider about where that money would come from.
I think it's a tough one, Mark. Again, I'm going to go back to my point of sustainability. I'm an entrepreneur, and I understand what it takes, and I've run numerous businesses, and I think I have a good understanding of what it takes to run a business. Honestly, when I ran, I was elevated from business liaison to managing director of food nutrition. Reason that's important is because the food nutrition department is an enterprise fund. It's the only budget in this at central office that doesn't get funded through the general fund, which means it literally gets funded by its own from farms, basically. Okay, so low income meals and stuff like that, and what the federal government gives to the school system to help support that. My point is, I ran it when I was there like it was a business. It had always been in the red. Every year it had been in the red. Okay, until from what I was told, until my second year there, when it started turning around and going back into the black. The reason that's important is because it was the first time we were able to not have to dive into the general fund to get.
But if you look at the school system in general, though, I think maybe let me throw something out here that we can talk about when we come back from the news break a bit. Maybe part of the problem is we shouldn't be looking at education as a business. That we should be looking at education as a place where we teach our children. That part of it, we have this business formula that says you principals have to manage this money. You have to figure out what you're going to be, either going to have an art or music teacher or a math teacher. You have to fix your roof with this money. This is your money. You have to deal with your school. Maybe that's the problem, that we should not be dealing with our schools like they're a business. I mean, it seems to me, ever since we started doing that and taking money, that we've had a disaster on our hands. Principals are not supposed to be business people. Principals are supposed to be educators.
But when you take the budget, though, and that's what I'm saying, when you take the budget and you put the budget in the hands of the principal, remember, it was decentralized. Budgets were decentralized and given to principals to manage themselves.
But the difference is giving principals a chance to run their schools pedagogically is different than giving principals the power to run their schools in terms of business. That's a problem.
But they had business liaisons to do that.
That obviously didn't answer the question.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I agree with you there, but what I'm trying to say is that we haven't tackled.
We have to take a news break. And Bibi, it looks like you were going to say something. Let me take a quick news break, come back, let Bibi jump in. Please, folks, what do you think, where we should go? Where does money come from? 410-319-8888 to avoid these drastic cuts coming to our city schools. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. This is Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. As we jump back into our conversation, I agree with what I just said. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, has been helping its members and its community prosper for the last 80 years. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at signershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We are here with Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education at Morgan State University, Bibi Verdery, who is Director of the Educational Reform Project of the ACLU of Maryland, A. Rod Womack, author of Redwood, had a new book coming out called
Central Office.
Thank you. Central Office on Public Schools. That's capital here. I've got to cross that out. And former Baltimore City School Director of Food and Nutrition and a Business Advisor to Schools. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Please join us with your ideas and thoughts. Email us at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Bibi, pick up on where we left off in terms of this. When A-Rod and I were going back and forth, I understand some of what A-Rod was saying about what was the problem with what Lonzo negotiated and how that added to it. And I was coming back saying, no, it's the formula. And you're saying, no, it's probably both.
Yes, I mean, if the state funding is flat and state funding is your main funding source, then anytime you take on a new expense, you have to think about whether you're going to have the money to pay for that. So Mr. Womack was making the point that, you know, could the system really afford the teacher contract? You could say, you know, could the system afford to put in its $20 million for the school construction program? You know, there are certain drivers that Dr. Santelices has identified that are leading to the deficit, but underlying them all is a lack of state funding. And, you know, some would say a certain amount of city funding that needs to come in.
I mean, it's going to be a couple of things here. From the state level, there has to be some sense of political will in the state that allows this money to come to the city schools. I mean, there has to be a certain amount of alliance between certain delegates and senators from different jurisdictions, whether it's Baltimore City, Prince George's, and Montgomery County, to say we need money for our schools and we have to fight for this collectively and push it, which is where the majority of the people live and where a lot of the delegates and senators come from. I mean, it's a political battle on that level.
Yes, and last year, I think after the uprising, we saw more sympathy, more understanding in Annapolis for Baltimore, and a whole Baltimore package was passed to address, you know, library extended hours and after school for children and so on. The governor did not fund those this year. So we, as those in Baltimore and its allies across the state, really have to say, do you want Baltimore to fail? You know, this idea of if Baltimore is stronger, Maryland is stronger. It cannot just be Baltimore delegates and senators. They're in a position now, they have to cut the state budget in order to find money to fill this gap. The mayor needs to do her part because it's a joint responsibility, and Annapolis is not going to put more money on the table unless they hear from the mayor with real new money. So it's a political will situation, as you say, Mark.
So one of the things that I was looking at the numbers here in terms of where the money comes mm-hmm. from for schools, I'm going to go to our next caller here in just 1 minute, but I just want to throw this out here that it's the percentage of money that we do not spend on our schools that other jurisdictions do, who put, you know, 75, 45, 55% of their budget into schools. Where does that money come from for our schools? So one of the things we mentioned just during breaks just briefly that I've been talking about a lot is where do we spend our money in Baltimore City? Where does that money
go?
Police.
Policing.
So what would happen?
We definitely value policing more than educating.
There's two things. A, I always push the question, what would happen if you took $100 million out of the police budget? That's for argument's sake. I don't know the answer to that completely. How would that negatively affect the ability for police to do their job in keeping the city safe? Because there is a lot of crime in Baltimore City. That's real. But if you took money out of the city budget and said you put X amount into an alternative public safety program that utilizes more safe streets, that utilizes more mental health workers, that utilizes, say, women from Out for Justice or from Power Inside that could become community workers to help the communities through the issues they're facing, would that then allow the police to use less money to direct that at the real violent players in our community, get them off the streets, A, and B, then put a huge amount of money, what is that, $50, $60 million, into our schools. To really start thinking about, but we don't know because no one's actually done the study about how police spend their money, where that money, you know, and where it goes, and could that money be more effectively spent in our schools and other places? That's a question we should be asking, I think.
Well, I think, it goes back to priority. So we perceive a strong police force as engendering safety, right? So there's this perception by the community, okay, if we have strong police, we're safe. I disagree with that premise, that safety is about, to me, education is your biggest bet for safety long term. So what the police department has done masterfully is they said, okay, we need to be funded because y'all want to be safe, right? Yes. So police equals safe. Well, I don't think the education community has been as vigilant in making a case for, well, if people's first priority is safety, because, you know, we'll do whatever to feel safe. How do we bring our education conversation to that narrative to make it more of a priority? Because you're not going to get rid of this I got to be safe conversation. But we can say, well, if education is funded a particular way, then safety long term is going to be the impact. But that's not what we're doing. We're just saying educating the kids. Now, I think that's going to appeal to some people. But, you know, in America, you know, when we got 9/11 happened, we shifted our whole system of flight because we want it to be safe. That's something that we care a whole lot about. That's a priority. We can screw you, but we're going to be safe.
Well, then we as educators have to think about, if that's the narrative people respond to, then how can we bring our conversation to that narrative in a way that will propel people to make this more of a priority? That's one way to do it, because you got to be real savvy when you're making a case for something. Just saying, love our kids, eh, I mean, it sounds good, but it don't really move the needle. We be safe. That's okay, we got to get some police. We better get out here. You know what I'm saying? So I think we got to start moving our narrative from we just got to do for the kids, which I think is something we care about, but I don't think we necessarily move the needle for our kids like we do for the safety issue. Something to consider. I just thought of that.
No. Good point. We've had that discussion.
I think that, I mean, I just have to say that is so well said.
It is
and
well
just
said.
Really connecting the dots there. I applaud you for that. I mean, you think about who are the kids downtown that are carjacking.
Right.
What would happen if they had after school, if they had mentors, if they had internships that were paid and a future to look forward to? That, you know, I'm not saying that they're the only sources of crime in the city, but there is a connection in juvenile crime and whether our school system and all the other wraparounds that we need in the city are doing what they need to do.
Mm-hmm. It is a matter of where we put that money. And I think that's a discussion we really haven't had in a very serious way. I mean, we don't have time to get into it now, but you know, we have a lot of obstacles in the way, the FOP, the city police itself saying they need all the money. I mean, we really need to have that honest look. When was the last time the police department's really been audited?
Yeah,
about where the money goes and how it's spent. I mean, so these are really serious issues.
They get to have carte blanche because we want to be safe and we have it connected to the police department, so they get to make us safe. But it's not working because we still don't feel safe.
So let me go back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Jill, you're on the air with us. Thank you for joining us.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, Jill.
Everybody. I agree with so much of what's been said today. And I want to say, as a Baltimore homeowner, I would be willing to put some amount of money into a contributory fund to contribute to fixing the gap for this year. I agree we need to go to the state, you know, absolutely. But personally, I'd be willing to do that in terms of solutions. Wanted to say something about the teacher's salary, so-called increase, which is really not much more than a cost of living update, really. But it also came with additional responsibilities for teachers. The teachers gave up the automatic salary increase that used to happen on just an annual basis. If you were rated satisfactory, you can get an increase. That's not true anymore. You really have to demonstrate, certain competencies in a much more stringent way than used. So I also want to mention that teacher salary increase is really impacted by the continual increase in healthcare costs that have to do with our, for-profit healthcare industry. So I hope people take that into consideration when they think about
that. And you're a former teacher, is that right?
That's right, former teacher, a fine arts supervisor in 19 years in Baltimore City Schools. I agree with you, Mark, that schools are not businesses. That began with Reagan, total quality management, all that. They need to have business like that. Aspects. They need to be accountable. I absolutely agree with that, but they're not. And the fact that really no entity has been able to large scale make a profit running even charter schools is evidence that, that's not the way to think about it. There are disadvantages in fair school funding when every school has to, do their...
I'm sorry, we seem to have lost Jill. How did we lose Jill? Just went dead? Okay. So we lost Jill, but I'm sorry, Jill, about that. I don't know what happened. So tell me, let's talk in the next few minutes about what the responses can be. I'm wrestling with what our next steps on the show should be and how we continue to push this issue very consistently. You mentioned on the top of the show, BB, that there were demonstrations happening Thursday in Annapolis. I mean, what's being organized and what response should be? Because we really did not get into, which we do in the next show, what would it mean if we cut all the things we're saying we cut for the fall school term coming up? And for the summer as well. BB.
Well, if people will go to the Facebook page of the Baltimore Education Coalition, which is BEC for Our Kids, we will try to post there not only details about this Thursday's rally, but the Friday Fix the Gap phone call campaign and the other methods that there's a rally being planned by the Downtown Baltimore Family Alliance Saturday week. So that will be posted with the details. So there are things that, that people can do, and we need the public to stand up because this is the time that our elected officials need to hear from Baltimore.
We only have like a 2 months left in this legislative session, less than that actually, a month and a half or so left, 6 weeks left in this legislative session to push that. And then we have to, what's happening with our city budget. I mean, this is a hugely critical for the future of our kids.
Yeah, this solution is going to be holistic. If nothing else, I mean, it's going to be holistic. It's the school system doesn't exist on an island. And so we've got to make sure that, yeah, the state steps up, the city must step up, private partners have to step up. We've got to work with, like you said, looking at budgets, police budgets, and then seeing other ways that we can support schools and school programs to keep more kids out of the system, you know, and into schools and graduating so that we can solve some of those issues, so that they don't become bigger issues, you know, from those kids not having those programs. So that's a big part of the problem, too.
Ditto. I think we've said a lot here, and I think at the end of the day, we have to stop making this an abstract conversation and get to the nuts and bolts. What is it going to mean for students coming out of Baltimore City in the next year, 5 years, if this continues the way that it goes? I think we should attach it to safety, because you're not going to be safe if your kids are uneducated.
Absolutely.
Period. And if we care about that, we need to start building a narrative that supports it based in what we care about. And I think we care about our kids, but I think we care about being safe more. So that's a way to kind of come in, like, hey, let's do an analysis of what will it mean for 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, for the safety of our city, for the viability of our city, if we don't address these issues. How is property values going to be impacted with a failing school system? See, these are things that people, I think, care more about than just help the kids. I think we say that, but when people start hitting it in their pockets and their safety, and I can't walk the streets, and we start connecting it to that, maybe it'll get higher on the priority scale. That's just an opinion that I have.
No, and I think that we, as we close out here, we will continue looking at this in our program to kind of push these ideas, talk to our city representatives and state delegates about this over the coming weeks, and kind of push this idea of what happens to our city schools. You have to think about it. I was thinking about it as you were speaking earlier, Ronnie, about your daughter. Who's in what's not advanced? What's it called?
AP.
Excuse me. AP student at Poly.
And no, Western. She will Western. Kill you if you no Western.
I'm sorry. Western. Sorry.
She's not at Poly.
Gotcha. Western. I'm sorry. That
and they're doing great, by the way. I love the principal. Hey, Principal White.
No, they're doing good
they're
work.
They're doing
there.
Good work, but she's up against it. When we went to the budget meeting, parents were looking. I didn't go, but.
It also, to me, begs the question that most of our students, the majority of our kids in our school system, come from poor working class families in the city school system. They don't have Ronnie Ellington, who's a math professor, as a mother that can do wraparound that other kids don't get. Right? Because of the nature of our existence. And that's what we have to remember. And I think that we're in the middle of Black History Month. And I think that if there's ever time for a creative discussion about what reparations really mean, this is part of that creative discussion about what reparations really mean. Doesn't mean sending every black family in America a check for $10,000. Right. It means putting money into things like our school system that our most dispossessed children need, so they will no longer be dispossessed. And I think that is a critical piece that we have to make that argument as well. And we have to look at how our public safety money is being spent, and maybe how we can redirect that money for the betterment of the entire city, and how we have to look at things like Port Covington and other development projects that get all the city money that entire project has not helped the poor citizens in the city one iota, not in housing, not for jobs, not for a commitment to what is going to be their future in this development that uses our public money. We have a lot of discussions to have. So I want to thank our three guests here. This has been great. It's always great to have you in the studio. B.B. Verdery, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you had to be in Annapolis today. Good to have you here on your way.
Thank you, Mark.
She's Director of Education for the ACLU of Maryland. Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education here at Morgan State University. Always great to have your
thank
voice
you.
In the air here. A-Rod Womack, Arthur Redwood, and...
Central Office
of Public Schools. But actually, I can't remember any of these days. Right. Former Public City School Director of Food and Nutrition, Rod, B.B., Ronnie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for inviting me.
We're going to take a brief break when we go away. We're going to talk about how we can get healthy in your mind, body, and spirit as we face all these things with Changa Squared and Michelle. We'll be right back.